molecular acid.
You must be using it for blood.
There is an explanation for this, you know.
It's a robot. She's a goddamn robot.
Bio readouts are all on the green. Looks like she's alive.
They've lost contact with the colony on LV-426.
All we know is that there's still no contact with the colony and that a xenomorph may be involved.
Excuse me, sir. A what?
A xenomorph.
It's a bug hunt.
I'll tell you what I know. We sat down on LV-426. One of our crew members was brought back on board with something attached to his face, some kind of parasite.
I'm Mindy.
And I'm Darren. And we are The Rants Macabre, a part of the Fangoria Podcast Network. For more information about the network, including other programs, how to follow the show, and find past episodes of The Rants Macabre, please visit fangoria.com. Last episode, we were joined by Dawn and Jen from Women in Caskets to discuss the original Alien and James Cameron's sequel, Aliens. In this episode, everyone's back to talk about Alien 3, but due to some technical problems, we don't have the Women in Caskets for Alien Resurrection. That'll just be Mindy and I. So we're going to jump right in and discussing the studio mess that became Alien 3.
We went through a series of writers and some directors, and we talked to Ridley about doing it. We talked to I think who's Rennie Harlan, somebody we'd actually hired at one point.
Cliffhanger, Cutthroat Island, not a great director. This
what?
Could have been worse. That's kind of my point. This could have been worse.
Okay.
Then the New Zealand director, Vincent Ward, was hired, and he developed the story into a place where the studio was happy to go and start production. His idea was that it was going to take place on a planet colony of Luddite monks so it would be like Ripley crash landed in the 10th century.
Right.
They had sort of manufactured all these things with wood facades, and it was going to be a little offbeat. I mean, the movie is strange, but it was going to be even weirder. So the studio had so much invested in the movie that they wanted to take out any weirdness, so they took it away from him and hired David Fincher, who up to that point had been a visual effects producer, an assistant cameraman, and a matte photographer, and finally director of music videos.
I thought Fincher was a great idea, and so I liked him right away. Then we were in this big meeting at Fox, and with all the suits and everything, and I think he was wearing an animal rights T-shirt. I finally said toward the end of the meeting, "So how do you picture Ripley in this movie?" And he said, "I don't know, bald." And that was the moment where I fell in love with him, because I thought, that's such a great idea.
So Aliens 3, I describe it as like, this is the nihilist punk rock alien film we didn't know we wanted.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. There's clearly things wrong with it.
Oh, yeah.
But I like the idea of the monks choosing now. I mean, that they're not exactly chosen to be there as far as they were prisoners, but the people who choose to stay. I really like that idea. And then throwing Ripley into that, I was like, okay, because where else are you going to put her? She's going to go into some like cryogenic sleep. She's going to wake up in a shitty situation. It's like, which shitty situation is she going to be in this time?
Yeah.
Let's put her with monks.
I'm with you. I actually don't hate this one at all. There are the beginning and the end are highly problematic, but the middle is actually really solid. Like, I feel like this movie could have been really good if they had just fixed a few things.
Now, I'm curious, have you seen the theatrical cut and the director's cut?
Yes.
Okay, because Mindy and I were talking about it earlier today, that there are actually pretty dramatic differences between the two.
And
I think I've only seen the theatrical cut.
I don't like the theatrical cut.
I'm with you.
But the director's cut does some really interesting things. What I really liked, one thing that I can think of that's very, very different in, from theatrical to director is the ox.
Yeah. Mm.
Because that I love.
Yeah.
The alien like birthing out of
bursting through a chest, not human, an ox.
Oh, loved that.
So there were a couple awesome details behind that. I guess in the theatrical cut, it's a dog for some reason.
Right. Because you feel bad, because what is kind of cool about the dog is the face hugger leaves these nasty marks on the dog's face.
Okay.
And that's kind of cool to see like how they would react to something that was not human. And so it like actually the dog has these like cuts.
It clawed into it.
Yeah, and that was kind of cool to see it, you know.
Yeah, I like just the visual of like this giant piece of meat sort of being exploded.
Yeah.
But so the idea that this movie is, the production is a tragedy from top to bottom.
I always felt that Alien 3 was a movie that initially, as a studio, we set out to make a release date and not make a movie. And I think along the way that changed, but that really set us back.
They got in contact with Giger. They wanted him to work on new designs. The idea that every alien xenomorph we've seen up to this point has taken on the form of a human being. So like generally bipedal, but this time around it was going to be a slick quadruped. It was going to be
from the dog or from the ox. Right.
Yeah.
David was very interested in bringing Giger back on this one to get his take on the concepts.
In his mind was a kind of puma or a beast like that that was difficult. When finally I did it, it came out like a lion something, and that was not exactly that what he wanted.
On the documentary on the DVDs, they show what he had in store, and so he had the sort of, you know, pen and ink version, but he was working hand in hand with the sculptor who made a maquette of his design fully fleshed out. And it's awesome. It is really a shame that it didn't get used.
It was just 1 month's time to talk, and then was, I didn't hear anything. I think I had no time to do it. I think I did much too much for them, and the time was short.
But it was this sort of, you know, if the xenomorph was more like panther-like, and like they're unsettling to look at in the first place, but like one step less anthropomorphized. And it was really, really creepy. And like, yeah, that's something to be terrified of.
That's what I kind of like, if I would say like I dislike about this movie, it's the CGI. And it's, I understand it's 1992, but like, it's not good. It's not bueno.
A lot of what I saw the theatrical cut years ago, and even then I was just kind of grossed out. Like it was unsettling. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that is actually not CGI. Similar to the Queen in the second one.
A lot of this movie is going to be a third scale puppet. I mean, in fact, we're hoping that most of the time that you see the creature, it's going to be the puppet, because it's just got things to it that you can't do with a man in a suit.
Stop motion is too jerky. I mean, that's out of date. I mean, you can't have a character running in the scene without the natural motion blur that you'd expect to see.
It just looks so out of place. And also the solar storms that come brushing by.
Oh, God.
Like at first I thought that there was something wrong with the disc. I was like, what is that? There's like black lines all over my
TV. This is the visual equivalent of a CD skipping.
Yeah, I was like, oh, maybe this is like not a good DVD. Maybe I scratched it.
Yeah, the visuals fall short in a couple places. But Jen, what you were saying before in terms of the opening not really living up to the standard of the series, that they sort of shortchange the invested fan in the idea that she saved the day. She got the work done. She got Hicks and Newt and Bishop on that ship, and they're dead before the fucking credits start.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the most upsetting thing about the movie.
I think,
how it's
And the first time I saw it, I was just really irate through the entire movie because of that.
Wow.
Like, I was just, like, I had to see it a second time before I could even just sort of divorce myself from my anger over not having Hicks and Bishop and Newt there.
James Cameron used to always talk about the possibilities of Alien 3 and what would happen. And James Cameron always used to tell us that he always kind of planned on Ripley, Hicks, and Newt going back to Earth and being a family.
It's one of those things where I can understand the Hollywood machinations behind it, but it's just such a crappy cop-out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it just is. Really is, because there were so many things they could have done to forward those characters in that situation.
Right.
In that, you know, the sort of isolation and the sort of religious fervor and, mm-hmm. you know, some, you know, the way the sort of company was represented in terms of the, I don't want to say cowardly, but sort of callow prison officials that mm-hmm. were in charge there, you know, that sort of take the place of the company for the first three quarters of the movie.
Fury 161. It's one of Weyland-Yutani's backwater work prisons.
The story goes that her, the ship that she was on, recognized that she was crossing an inhabitable planet, so they sort of jettisoned the escape pod, and in from her perspective, the crash landing meant that everyone died except her.
And she said she saw my character, Hicks, made up of like a dummy character of me, laying on the ground with my chest opened up as if the alien came out of me. I said, oh, that's interesting. So I called my agent, who's Ed LaMotta, who's like way up there, and I said, Ed, what the fuck, man? I mean, it's one thing not to be in it. It's another thing for me to have had fucking that alien come back in me and have it come out of my chest with, you know, blah, blah, blah. I said, no fucking way can they do this, can they? And he said, no, man, that's your likeness and they can't, so on and so forth. So he called.
So she washes ashore. I guess that's different between the two versions, but in the director's cut, or closer to director's cut, she sort of washes ashore and she's discovered there. But by the time they go to, you know, fetch Newt and Hicks, they're long gone. Mm-hmm. And so they explain that this is a prison colony. There's a really eerie subplot to the idea that lice are just swarming around this planet.
Yeah,
that's
and
so gross.
On the director's commentary, they talk about how they used baby, was it crickets or beetles? Let's see. So there are giant lice in the pipes at one point that mm-hmm. become evident, and baby crickets. And they really did get into everything. They were even in like the xenomorph costumes that were shipped back to LA.
Oh.
Yeah. So she's terrified at the idea that a facehugger got into the ship with them. So begrudgingly, what is the actor's name? Okay, so Charles Dance, he plays the character Clemens, who, it's funny, I've seen that actor in a bunch of stuff. This is the only time I've ever seen him, like, young and handsome and where I didn't hate him.
Yeah. He does kind of normally play unlikable people.
Yeah, he almost seems to specialize in villains. But in this case, like, I loved his character. She convinces him to do an autopsy because she has to know. And it's this really, like, turning the screw.
Everything's in place. There's no sign of infection. No indication of disease.
Chest. Open the chest.
And it's really emotional for her to watch it.
Yeah.
And she's being really tight-lipped about the whole operation. So he, you know, he's sort of putting up with her excuse about, like, a viral outbreak
it's
or
cholera
something.
Cholera is what she, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he is mean-mugging her while he's performing this autopsy. It's the strangest, most resentful autopsy I could imagine, where he's giving her the stink eye the whole time. But eventually, like, he recognizes that, like, there's more to what she's going through. And so he sort of passes on her lie about a potential contagion and why they were breaking protocol.
Would you like to tell me what we're really looking for?
To this day, and between this and the TV show Rock, mm-hmm. I've loved Charles Dutton since I was a little kid.
Right, of course.
Charles Dutton plays the sort of evangelical preacher. He is the leader of these religious nuts on this penal colony. Mm-hmm. It's funny, I wrote a note that this movie kind of serves as a bleak look at a potential future where if we don't course correct, we're going to end up a prison colony of religious fundamentalists. But I love his character in that he is pious, but he's still like, it's funny, for all the religiosity, he still recognizes that like he is a broken, like, you know, criminal. He tells her, like, before she has the opportunity to warm up to him.
Yeah, well, you don't want to know me, lady. I'm a murderer and rapist of women.
Really? Well, I guess that must make you nervous.
I can't think of very many worse scenarios. Only if she landed on a planet full of xenomorphs could this be worse. Right.
No, now she's on a planet full of xenomorphs and rapists.
Exactly. Right.
But exactly. At the same time, which I find very interesting, is that even though they make it a point to be like, yeah, these are hardened criminals and rapists and murderers, but they never really, they don't abuse the rape thing at all, as far as, like, there's never...
You mean from the story angle?
Yeah, from a story, yeah, from a
that,
story
there's
angle.
There's just that one scene when she goes to look for Bishop.
Yeah, right. And she's a bunch out. Have broken off from the pact.
Take off. I got to re-educate some of the brothers.
Yeah, and they've sort of broken off. And I think when he appears again, mm-hmm. you sort of see the trajectory that these criminals have taken. That, yes, they are still criminals, but you kind of get the feeling that there's... They've found their redemption, and they know it's outside of society. They know they don't belong there, but at the same time, they're trying to be better. And there's sort of this weird push-pull. I really have issues with that rape scene or that attempted rape scene on a number of levels in terms of it being necessary at all. But
no, it's not terrible. But they could have done... So much worse, so many more horrible things.
Yeah, they could have done, like, the use of sex in this movie is really strange. Kind of off-putting and strange. The relationship between her and the doctor, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
They have that sort of moment, which is kind of understandable and kind of weird. And
it kind of feels like it's out of nowhere, and they sort of justify it, but it's still very like, wait, what?
I think it's a ham-fisted attempt by half a dozen screenwriters to sort of intimate the idea of Ripley being impregnated.
I never thought mm-hmm. of it that way, but yeah.
You know, that's, you know, you introduce the idea of sex, be it willing or unwilling, and the idea that there's now something inside of Ripley.
I found something at the accident site, just a bit away from where it happened. A mark, a burn, rather like the one you found on the girl's cryotube.
And I think that was sort of like a ham-fisted attempt to foreshadow that, or because someone decided, well, Ripley hasn't gotten with anybody in two movies, we need to get her laid.
Two movies, it's like 350 years.
Yeah, right? It's been a long time.
Like, yeah. There's an itch that has not been scratched in a long time.
Yeah, but they do glaze over it, though, pretty quickly. It's like, all right, they're going to have sex, and oh, they had sex. Oh, okay. It happened.
Yeah, and for her, it's kind of... It's not really treated any one way or another. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like, well, that happened.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't really know why or what the point of it was, other than the fact that, you know, she's been through hell for three movies. Maybe we give her a moment of comfort of some sort, and that just happens to be sex.
But if they had set it up like that, like just given her a little bit more dialogue or something to where, I don't know, I just feel like they didn't convey that very well. It just was like, oh, you're attractive. You're attracted to me? All right, let's bone. Like, that's it. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I don't really need any boning in my alien movies.
No.
I just,
you know, if it would have been this, like, desperate, like, I could see it working if it was, like, this desperate need, like, using it as this way to, like, hang on to humanity or hang on to, like, feeling something again, I could see it maybe working, but you'd really have to like,
you have to have a really good writer, and this script didn't have any of them.
No. No. That's why we
had a lot of writers, and none of them were particularly great.
That's why we go from, do you find me attractive, to, oh, we already fucked. And it's done.
Yeah. I guess this is the first movie where there's any legitimate downtime where the characters aren't either going to or running from any particular threat or, you know, stimulus outside.
Yeah, because that's after the autopsy, and Ripley is even thinking that she might be kind of in the clear until someone comes and picks her up to take her home, with the next shift change or whatever it is that they're waiting for. And so, you know, you sort of see that, you know, maybe this is a downtime and maybe this is like that breath of fresh air, that feeling that maybe that there's a future of normalcy ahead of some sort, but... you know, then of course shit happens. and I want to say one of my favorite scenes in this movie, and I've got two that just really stand out as being scenes that I like, is the scene between her and Bishop. The fact that the two of them get a little bit of closure.
Yeah.
And she gets to, you know, she got some closure with something.
It was with us all the way.
The company know?
The company knows everything that happened on the ship. It all goes into the computer and gets sent back to network.
And they want it.
I heard. Do me a favor. Disconnect me. I could be reworked, but I'll never be top of the line again. I'd rather be nothing.
And that Bishop is very aware. You kind of have that hearkening back to Kill Me. You know, like, I'm done. You can't save this. There's nothing I can do to help you anymore. And it's, you know, she has to turn him off. And I just remember being very affected by that because it is very much the last tie that she has before she sets herself completely adrift amongst these convicts.
Yeah.
That, and then of course the aliens come up, and I thought it was really smart the way they introduced the idea of maybe Ripley's got one in her in when the alien doesn't kill her.
Right.
Yeah. And
that moment where she has been literally backed up against a wall. It is right there in her face.
So good.
And it is such a tense moment because you're expecting it to just like glomp and rip her head off. And it doesn't. It just sort of sits there. And it looks at her, and it looks at her, and it looks at her, and it's a really, really tense moment. And you have that idea of them being intelligent beings, and you see that there is something going on, and then it leaves.
And it's funny, too, because I feel like that image is one that people associate.
Yeah, that was a huge trailer moment, yeah.
Like, that's huge. Like, everyone associates it. And it's in number three. Like, I just feel like it's such a beautiful, wonderful moment. I wish it was in a different Alien
movie. It's like each movie kind of has its one iconic moment. And that was Threes. And, like, no matter what else you think about Three, you have to admit that's a really great moment that they crafted right there.
Yeah. I love the subtext of that moment is that for every horrible thing this thing could do to you, you've got a lot bigger problems, lady.
Right.
Yeah.
And that, you know, she figures it out quickly after that. That scene, I mean, there's a reason it's like the poster, it's on the trailer. Yeah. That was their trailer moment.
Yeah. And it's just very, very clearly, you know, that's when you realize that, you know, she's not going to die right now, but she is not going to end well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She will never get her happy ending.
No.
Which is fine. There doesn't have to be happy endings. I just wish it wasn't the same ending for her over and over and over again.
Right. I think if anyone deserves it, though, it's kind of Ripley. She's put the time in. She's done all the right things. She follows the rules. The
closest they could get is, well, you don't have a happy ending, but how about we clone you and give that clone a happy ending?
Yeah, right.
I meant to mention this while we were talking about the new shape of the xenomorph, but this is almost too adorable to pass up. On the commentary, they talk about how in tests, they tried literally dressing up a dog and having it be the xenomorph after the chest burst scene.
Oh, I remember seeing, I think I saw like pictures of the test of that, and it looks so ridiculous.
It's the greatest dog Halloween costume you could ever imagine.
It's like, have you ever seen those Halloween costumes of dogs and like spiders?
Yes.
Oh my
God.
That's
exactly what it looks like, only it's a little xenomorph instead of a spider.
Oh, that's adorable.
It is. So you see very clearly why they didn't go with that, because there is nothing scary about that image at all. It is hysterical.
It's a whippet. So you could imagine, I'll show it to you tomorrow at work. You can imagine running at full trot where like legs in the air, It might resemble a xenomorph that you're afraid of. But when it's just like, boop, 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 it's too fucking cute for words.
And I feel like that right there sort of encompasses the problems with this entire movie, where they had so many weird ideas that they wanted to cram into one thing, and it had so many hands in it, and everybody wanted to do their little thing. Like, you could almost see, like, Sigourney Weaver getting the script for this and going, please kill me.
So that rewrite came in, and it was a disaster, and everybody walked off the movie. So we nobody was going to do that one.
Can we kill me off so I don't have to do any more of these? Can we?
Hey, at least you got laid.
Finally.
So, yeah. So it is a throwback to the first one in the sense of this is a closed environment. They don't have weapons because it is a penal colony.
Well, what kind of weapons have you got?
This is a prison. It's not a good idea to allow prisoners access to firearms.
Keeps them from killing you.
Fear? There's no way to escape. With the arrival of the next supply ship, the company would eliminate.
This is a maximum security prison, and you have no weapons of any kind? Then we're fucked.
And it's back to one xenomorph. Mm-hmm. And they introduce a couple cool things in terms of like incorporating its speed and its agility, that it is way faster than anything we've encountered before. And there's the great like POV moment where we watch it run sideways up the wall and upside down. Yeah. Where like, these days every other horror movie has someone walking on a ceiling.
Right. But at the time,
in 1992, from an alien, it was, you know, unexpected. But yeah, I guess then there's the visuals of like the bad puppet incorporated into the scene that looks like bad CG, and
right,
kind of ruin an opportunity
ceiling
there. Yeah. It's funny, but what you were saying before about, you know, there are great elements, but they kept having the rug pulled. I wrote that note that this movie really is an assembly of brilliant artists, great actors, and one of the greatest living directors who constantly have the rug pulled out from them by Fox.
The end of the film was very confusing for everybody because, from memory, again, it did seem that we were going to finish the film. We were going to conclude everything. And then it got to the point where it seemed that wasn't going to be the case. So then we ended up having to decide, you know, at what point do you say goodbye?
On the commentary, like, just it keeps getting worse, and you feel worse and worse for the people involved because it's kind of like they never had a chance to win. And yeah, for an alien franchise movie, you know,
it was very much, we need to cash in on this. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, I think they saw the bank that Terminator 2 made so long after its initial movie had come out, and they were like, oh, hey, well, we want to make some bank on this too.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if we do another Aliens movie.
Yeah. And apparently it did very well overseas. It didn't do great here, although it did outperform the original Alien. But it did great in Asia and Europe.
Of course it did.
Why, of course?
Weird as shit. The weirdest movies are huge overseas. It always is entertaining to me.
Yeah. Well, I guess it goes a long way that it was like a mostly English cast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I don't know. There's not a ton more to say about this movie in terms of
it's a series of
missed opportunities.
The one thing I will say, and this is sort of like my own personal meta commentary on it, is that, oh, it's a penal colony. Now we can have all the actors of color because now they're all prisoners.
Yeah,
and I remember having that thought very, very clearly when I watched the movie, and I was like, "Oh, the prisoners. Oh, so we can have the big scary black guy be one of the prisoners." And
yeah, but he's American.
There's a person of color.
There's a comment also that he's American.
He's one of the only Americans.
Yeah, he's there representing the like prison industrial complex. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Yeah,
but that's just my own personal meta commentary on the whole thing. I was like, yeah, if we're gonna lump a bunch of cliches together, let's just throw that one on top too.
Love the sort of suicide mission.
Because they won't kill it. They might kill you just for having seen it, but they're not going to kill it.
That is crazy. That is horseshit. They will not kill us.
When they first heard about this thing, it was crew expendable. The next time they sent in Marines, they were expendable too. What makes you think they're going to care about a bunch of lifers who found God at the ass end of space? You really think they're going to let you interfere with their plans for this thing?
Yeah.
And then when he takes on the alien himself, it's funny. I guess my parents saw this movie when it was in the theater, and they came home, and my dad acted out the Charles Dutton showdown with the alien. It was fucking hysterical. Yeah, that was awesome.
Well, you know, even if the xenomorph didn't kill them, I think lead poisoning still would be pretty bad, because that lead is just like flowing through the air and everyone's just breathing lead all the time. And if I have to sign in my apartments in New York City, if you have like an old apartment, you have to sign like that I don't have any kids that are going to eat the paint on my walls.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, like, I'm sorry, but you can't just have lead pouring through the air. It wasn't going to end well for anybody is basically what I'm saying.
So, yeah, they use that molten lead. I guess without weapons, all they can do is sort of set a trap and hope that it falls into their refinery where they pour molten lead on it. And it is a great moment. It's funny. It reminded me of, did you watch Breaking Bad?
Yeah.
Jen did. I didn't.
There is a moment where they need to use like a junkyard style magnet, electromagnet, to wipe out a police evidence room, specifically, you know, computers that would be there. And so the Jesse character, you know, he's a shitheel. When he sees it work in the test run, he goes, "Yeah, science, bitch!" And then when they had the xenomorph covered in hot lead, and then it still manages—I mean, what a fucking predator! When it can come out of molten lead and still be in a kick-ass mood,
right?
And then they pour the cold water on it, and it cracks because, you know,
so cool.
Incredibly hot, incredibly cold. Yeah. It's just it's gonna explode. That was my reaction. I was Jesse in the junkyard going, "Science, bitch!"
That's so good.
But yeah, so the end might be, I mean, like you were saying, the end and the beginning have the most marked sort of impact. The theatrical version versus the director's cut, also hugely different. And I had to text with Mindy earlier today that my memory of the theatrical cut is that when Ripley, you know, she has saved the day, when she is committing suicide by falling backwards into the, you know, sort of, I guess it's more...
molten lead.
I guess it's... but it looks like some sort of combustion, right? It looks like she's falling into the sun.
Yeah. It looks like fire.
In the theatrical version, the chest burster does its job and it gets out, and she kind of grips it and holds it in, and that's her sort of last hurrah. In the director's cut, it is a far more solemn death scene where it's just like a very comforting, like I've met the end of my arc and I am content. Yeah. And I thought that was almost a nicer end.
I thought, and I guess you didn't see it the same way I saw it, but it's to me when it like bursts out of her and they're going into the flames, to me it's almost like she's like holding it like a baby. Like she's like hugging it to her chest. And I don't know, like I felt like there was like a minute of like, and it could just be the peace that she finally finds in finally ending her story. Mm. And so it could be that, but like to me it was almost like a motherly kind of she just like hugs it close to her chest, you know, which could be like, don't run away, come burn up with me. But like, I don't know. I took it a little more like, I thought it was kind of like a motherly kind of action.
I'll look for that. I'll watch that again. Yeah, the most recently I only watched the director's cut, so that moment was only in my memory. Yeah,
there's a really weird expression on her face when she falls into, when she's falling backwards and it comes out of her, and I definitely see Minnie's point there, that it's a really weird look on her face when she is holding it close, and the sort of peace that I'm going out, this is how I'm going out, it was my choice, this is how I know it has to end. And I think there is sort of a weird...
Sadly, we have to interrupt here because there was a foul-up on the recording. Frankly, it was my fault. The card was full, and I didn't realize it until too late. So our recording with Dawn and Jen was interrupted mid-sentence.
To be fair, we had been recording at that time for over about 3 hours by that time.
Yeah. And then
it was getting late.
I mean, they hung in there with us for so long, and I feel like such a schmuck for... I mean, in essence, we wasted their time in that last half hour, and I feel really shitty about that.
We didn't get the recording, but we actually had a really good conversation, you know?
We did.
So, and it's always nice to talk with other people who share our views or have opposing views of the genre, so.
Yeah, and so, yeah, so Dawn and Jen, we do apologize. We'll make it up to you however we can. But so we were close. I listened to the audio and we were pretty close to getting to the fourth installment, Alien Resurrection. So,
which is terrible. Like, it leaves us with the crappiest one to do by just the two of us.
Right. We're just, yeah. It's like we stepped in it on our own. We can't even commiserate together. But okay, so here we go. Alien Resurrection, 1997, written by Joss Whedon.
Which I can't believe.
Buffy fame.
Yeah, because you know how much I love Buffy. Everyone knows I love Buffy. Yet I hate this.
So I'm not that big a Buffy fan, but I am a huge Firefly fan.
Okay.
And the movie Serenity, he did that. People know him for having done The Avengers 1 and 2. The script originally was written without Ripley in it.
Fair enough.
Fox went to him and said, we want to make another Alien movie. He said, I'd love to do that for you. Let's bring back the Xenomorph. Let's scare the shit out of people.
Right.
And very late in the game, they said, we'd like Sigourney Weaver to be in this. And he said, you killed her in the last movie.
Yeah.
And they're like, make it work. And he goes, clones!
We used blood samples from Fiore 16 on ice, where you died. We've remade you. We cloned you.
Okay, so he's actually a comic book fan, so it's almost a nod to like...
This is very like Hammer Frankenstein, though. Like, I know you don't want to make this sequel, but we're going to do it.
Right, we've already printed the posters.
We've killed him, but too late.
So it's funny, but on that note, they had a very hard time getting a director. And I think when directors were approached for this, they kind of recognized that like... We're not going to get to make our own movie. We're going to have to make the product that the studio wants to make.
Mm-hmm.
So of the directors they considered were David Cronenberg. He was an early choice, but he passed. Danny Boyle, Peter Jackson, and Bryan Singer.
That's crazy.
Frankly, any one of those guys would have made a better movie.
It would have been fine. It would have been just great and fine. Danny Boyle, a Danny Boyle Aliens would be...
That would have been
awesome. So awesome.
Yeah. Even if all the... He could have cast an entirely Scottish cast, and I'd still be fine with it.
Yeah, it's fine. It's great. Good stuff.
But, so they did choose the French director, Jean-Pierre Jeunet, who, in his own right, is a great filmmaker.
Yes, made some amazing films. Love City of Lost Children.
You like that one? I honestly haven't seen it.
It's beautiful.
Delicatessen is one I have seen, and that is really, like... eerie and charming and funny and offbeat and, again, gorgeous and very simple in this case. But he's got a couple, like, visual staples that we do see in Alien Resurrection. But in terms of his approach to it, like, he talks about it on the commentary and then behind-the-scenes stuff that, like, he was willing to enter the American studio system and just make an extended commercial.
Right, right.
And that's really disappointing when you're talking about something that we love and cherish, like the Alien series, and to hear them talk about it like product is pretty fucking gross.
But that, I mean, when you're watching it, that is what it is. It's not good.
Yeah.
I mean, not to say that there's not parts where you really enjoy and you get a kick out of some of the stuff, but on the whole, yeah, it's like such a crappy ending for the series.
Yeah, you kind of, I don't know. I guess I feel worst for Sigourney Weaver because, like, that's the last Alien movie she was in. Although Alien Isolation, she came back to the video game and did some pretty kick-ass work.
Yeah,
that.
But, I mean, she really, really wanted to be in Resurrection. So,
I guess so, and she's exec producer.
Exactly. So, yeah. I mean, it's kind of her own fault that she was involved in it. Let's be serious.
All right. No one's hands are clean in this movie. Okay, so a brief synopsis. The corporation still wants their xenomorph, so they took some scraps of old Ripley blood, I suppose, from the mining colony, and they cloned her. Incidentally, the big company we're talking about is no longer Weyland-Yutani, but a subsidiary of Walmart. It's a dumb joke they wedged into the movie.
Right, because the clone remembers some things, but not everything, but she remembers that there was a corporation.
Inherited memories passed down generationally at a genetic level by the aliens, like its strength, plus a highly evolved form of instinct.
Yeah, it's a disaster. But so I was thinking, had it been the Weyland-Yutani Corporation still, I could totally understand them wanting to recoup the billions of dollars that Ellen Ripley has cost them over the years.
But then why would they create another Ellen Ripley?
Well, they only need to get at the xenomorph.
Then immediately terminate the clone. Why? You know what I'm saying?
You're not thinking termination.
Oh, boy, am I thinking termination.
General, we do not perceive this to be a problem.
Ellen Ripley died trying to wipe this species out. For all intents and purposes, she succeeded. I'm not anxious to see her taking up her old hobbies.
That won't happen.
We won't tell her.
Oh, I see. And that's supposed to comfort me.
It's a very, like, James Bond villain thing to do. Like,
yeah.
This is probably going to backfire, but this is what we're going to do.
Right, it's like monologuing while the countdown's happening.
Exactly.
Yeah. but yeah, on the idea that, so through the Alien saga, Sigourney Weaver, as Ellen Ripley, destroyed the Nostromo, mm-hmm. which was on its way back with a full payload of excavated minerals. She kills the alien in that film, which could have made them millions. That was the whole point, that the computer wants the alien back. Then in the sequel, Alien, she kills another nest of xenomorphs, including a queen, and the entire man-made colony that they were on. And then in part three, she goes for the hat trick and killing two more, including another queen. I think Ellen Ripley single-handedly brought down the Weyland-Yutani Corporation.
Made it available for Walmart to buy in the future. They bought the stock, or she lowered the stock.
It was a penny stock by the time Ellen Ripley was done with them.
Exactly, exactly. And it kind of made me wonder, and it didn't occur to me before, but were they the ones that were mining the ore, or they're just taking the payload in the very first alien?
That's a good question. I imagine it's one of two things. It's either completely mechanized,
mm-hmm.
or on this outpost, there's just people living on it
because
way they are. In
a lot
the
of times
movie.
With like oil rigging or things like that, you get your flat fee, but then usually you get a percentage of the total of what you receive. So she like fucked every single worker out of their bonus as well.
Well, I mean, by that point, they were all dead. But I get your point. And it's funny, it's a big fuss that Yaphet Kotto and Harry Dean Stanton are complaining about their bonuses and they're not getting paid as much as everyone else. And they point out that, like, if we retrieve an alien and it brings in huge profits, you'll get a percentage of that.
Right, right.
But they're just, like, too dangerous. They're so practical.
They are, it's actually,
like,
yeah.
And he keeps saying, why don't you freeze him?
I don't understand.
Okay, so some of the stuff I did like was how much of this resembled the sort of template that Joss Whedon went on to use for Firefly.
Right, right.
The ship's hull that they're on resembles a lot what their ship Serenity winds up looking like. And I insist that Ron Perlman's character is essentially playing an R-rated version of Jane. He's just...
I really hated Ron Perlman's character, and I
really
love Ron Perlman. I love when I see him.
He's in City of Lost Children.
Yeah, exactly. I love when I see him. He can speak any language on film, and I think he's an amazing
person. Spanish in Guillermo del Toro's Cronos.
Yeah, and then he French in City of Lost Children. He doesn't speak a lot in City of Lost Children, but you know. I don't know. Like, I expected more from him. No, I don't. I don't like anything about it. I hate when he gets all up in Ripley's face.
I heard you, like, ran into these things before.
That's right.
Wow, man. So, like, what did you do?
I died.
I hate everything about him.
Speaking of Ripley, that she is a clone, it's kind of heartbreaking that they took this character who is, at this point, like, she would have been, had she not died, she would have been through so much and still come out a trooper. And I mean, that's why I love the character, that she is like an eternal pragmatist in terms mm-hmm. of it doesn't pay to have a meltdown and shut down. We just got to get shit done.
Right, right, right.
It doesn't matter that she wasn't a military figure. She doesn't have the training of a soldier, et cetera, et cetera. She's just, you know, when shit needs to get done, you know, she'll get in the payloader right. and payloader, autoloader.
That mech warrior thing.
Yeah. But in this one, this falls into the trap of every bad action movie sequel yeah. where their now invulnerable hero has ever increasing luck. And now we are launching cars and taking down helicopters by ramping cars into them. It's just ridiculous nonsense. So in this one, Ellen Ripley's a clone. She's super strong. We yes. learn that because she kicks the shit out of everybody.
Right. She's also very zen, it seems. She's like very calm and collected throughout pretty much everything.
Yeah, they kind of play with the idea of like genetic memory and that she has all these, you know, they're sort of like ghosts of memories that she mm-hmm. remembers that she's Ripley, there's a corporation, there was a little girl, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know. Having Sigourney Weaver not in the Ripley character, I don't know, man. I would have preferred her play anybody else.
Yeah, I would have preferred a completely entire story.
Yeah,
you know, I guess with there no is the one. Ripley.
The only moment she's really emotional is actually, well, with the exception of the like creepy clone alien queen baby, right. is when she finds clones 1 through 7. She right. is Ripley 8, and it's right. tattooed on
right.
her arm.
Which I was rewatching the Tally episode of South Park. It's a 2-part episode. Right. It was on last week, and I forgot how much of the second part of that episode is based on Alien Resurrection. So there's all these like different versions of Towley, and he's all like variously fucked up as they've been trying to clone Towley.
Okay.
And I thought to myself, I would have rather watched this episode.
Mindy recommends you watch South Park.
Yeah, and I hate Towley. I really do, but you know.
I don't like it because he's a bad message to children.
I don't get it. If they took it out, why are they keeping you alive?
Oh, they're curious. I'm the latest thing.
I don't know. I would get very nerdy in pointing out that when Ripley gets into the room where they've found the other clones and they're these combination hybrid alien mm-hmm. Ripley sad characters.
I like that part, actually. I wish it was more about that.
It was emotional, but like, I'm pretty sure that's all terrible science. Like, the dynamic of having the chest burster inside you is one of a autonomous parasite.
Mm-hmm.
It's not gene splicing with you.
Right,
it's
right.
It's just, it's feeding off you until it's time to leave.
Touché.
So the idea that, like, unless Ripley was hit with a tremendous amount of radiation while the chest burster was still inside her, like, there's no mutation, there's no gene
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, thinking back, that didn't happen.
Get away from me! Get away from me!
I did like seeing Leland Orser introduced. He's introduced late into the movie. He's a character actor who everybody would recognize. He was in The Guest very recently. But in 7, he's also the guy hyperventilating mm-hmm. because he was made to have sex with the prostitute with the cock blade. I mean, that's traumatizing for anybody.
But that is traumatizing.
He plays it incredibly well. But he always plays a panicky character. And in this, he's got a chest burster inside him, and it's brought to his attention. So
you're just waiting for it to burst like out of your chest.
Yeah.
Red, what's inside me?
There's got to be a process. Can you stop it?
What's in fucking inside me?
It's funny. For as formulaic as this movie is, well, maybe not formulaic, but it's a studio product, so they hit all the beats. It's incredibly gory.
Yeah.
This movie is bloody as hell.
Yeah, it actually is maybe the grossest one out of them as far as like gore and grossness.
Yeah, yeah. Between like the aliens can now spit acid because why not?
Why not? That was always a use for the plot device only, the acid.
Right.
Because but occasionally it would be acid-y and burn through the entire ship, and then occasionally it wouldn't, and then...
Right, and it, depending on shooting it close up, sometimes it would splash splatter. You,
but sometimes it wouldn't.
No, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the most striking things, and they really played it up in the commercial because it's like a trailer moment, was the underwater scene. And I guess the ship is just going apeshit, and that doctor sort of floods different things. And so the whole mess hall is flooded, and they have to swim through it. And then we get to see the aliens, in this case, CG aliens, streamline figure through the water. That was actually really cool.
Yeah.
This scene, separately from everything else, I thought it was gorgeous.
Like, don't let them on Earth, since we have so much water. They will get you.
They will thrive. I wonder, just how much they can... I mean, if I guess they can exist in space, why couldn't they exist underwater? They seem to do really well.
Yeah, they don't seem to be bothered by any sort of atmosphere either. No atmosphere, atmosphere, whatever. It's cool.
Like water bears.
Exactly. Maybe they're like evil water bears.
Xenomorphs are evil water bears.
Yeah.
All right. So stop shepherding the cause of water bears.
No, because but it doesn't those end water well, water bears are good. Xenomorphs are bad.
Water bears we only know as, wait, good? No. Water bears are not objectively good.
Yeah, they are. If you're like plankton or like algae.
If
they were giant,
if water bears were the size of aliens, if not Godzilla, like that's a horror show. That ends terribly
for
everyone.
They would eat all our trees. I think we would have a problem.
Yeah, so.
They don't eat people. They only eat like algae and shit.
For now. Because that's what's on their scale.
Because they can't fit it in their mouth.
Yeah. But
but that's a thought.
But yeah, so that underwater shot, all they talk about in the making of and the behind the scenes is how many people got hurt.
Excellent. That's what you want to talk about. The safety of your films. Or lack thereof.
So a lot of near drownings. And it was also gross because the initial tank, and it's this massive tank that Fox owns, filled with water and clear, didn't look like anything. It looked like they were floating in space. So they put milk in it.
Ew.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, can you, it was a huge tank. Can you imagine how much milk they had to pour in that just to get a little bit of viscosity to the water?
It's really disgusting.
And so, yeah, the actors were complaining. They could barely see where they were going. It was
excellent.
A mess.
I can't even swim anyway. So, and I hate like milk.
I was going to
ask
you,
that's like two things that are no good.
And so one of the, it is a terrifying concept. I mean, that whole scene is very, very rushed. But I thought the idea, like, if your last breath on this earth is a scream because a xenomorph is after you, like, that's a pretty horrifying thought.
Yes, that's no good.
Yeah. So, yeah, while they're in the underwater area, I did notice that they push aside an entire pig.
Why not?
Did you notice? And so, I mean, it's the mess hall. You assume they're going to have ham, but I think it's a pretty heavy-handed nod to delicatessen.
Yeah, because they're going to have ham, probably, but you don't know that they're having, like, a luau with a whole fucking pig.
Somewhere else is the apple.
Exactly.
That fell out of its mouth. You hated Winona Ryder.
Hated Winona Ryder.
I really liked her. I mean, I might have been a little awestruck because... She's terrific looking. And this was like the age of Winona.
Yeah, I really like Winona Ryder. Don't get me wrong. I really do. Hmm. I just don't in this movie. I hated the way she acted.
Oh, okay.
Like, I hated it. But I love Winona Ryder. As a little kid, I thought she was awesome because, you know, she was like me. She had, like, black hair and she was, like, translucent colored. And so I was like, oh, that's like me. It's someone I can identify with, you know. But no, in this movie, she was like... The acting was no good. And I get, like, you're an android, but, like, the point is, like, Ash, you don't know until the reveal is given.
Sure.
Her, you can tell all along. Either that or it's just bad, bad acting.
Oh, I didn't pick up on it. I thought it was a kind of ridiculous plot device that didn't really need to be there.
It was completely unnecessary.
But I didn't mind her acting.
I minded it. And I think she's great. And yeah, that's when she had the really short hair and she was like, yeah, it was Winona Ryder time, mid-90s.
So she does play Call, the android, which, I mean, that's, I guess, your first giveaway that she's a robot. I mean, who's named Call? No one's.
Yeah, that's
Call.
Not a name.
That's maybe, this is so far in the future. Who knows? But I thought it was very cool that she, it seems like they've gone past androids and they don't even use them anymore. That part isn't really explained. They do go through a bunch of exposition explaining that she was a generation of androids made by other androids. And you would think, like, that's when they take over the world and kill mankind.
Right, right. But no, they make sad sack androids instead.
I'm just... Look at me. I'm disgusting.
Yeah, she's a self-loathing,
like
sad...
Like an Eeyore kind of character.
She really hates that she's artificial. I don't know. It was a very strange thing. But it's an interesting contrast in terms of, like, every robot or android up to this point has thought of itself as superior. Bishop in the second movie is a nice change of pace. And then this is, like, continuing in that direction even further.
I thought synthetics were supposed to be all logical and shit. You're just a big old psycho, girl.
But there's a lot of silliness in terms of, like, she doesn't want to use her robot powers.
Right, exactly. Why don't you help us out? No, I don't. I'm not.
It's like, I don't want to.
I don't like that I'm a robot and could help you, but I'm not going to.
So, yeah, that the movie kind of, and then it devolves into the alien queen giving birth to this sort of half Ripley baby xenomorph white. It's very pale.
I did like when you first see the queen, though, in captivity. I will say, like, when you first see behind the glass.
Yeah.
I think that was a great reveal. Yeah. You know, that was a beautiful
and Brad
alien.
Dourif? Brad
Dourif. Oh, the creepy guy.
Yeah, Brad Dourif. Okay. Is what it's funny. When he goes up close to the glass, like, he looks like a xenomorph. It's creepy. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that actor very cool.
Is like instant creep. In
he's the only one I felt that actually got the Joss Whedon style.
Which is funny because his character wasn't supposed to be creepy in the original script.
Really?
Yeah, it was supposed to be a surprise.
Like,
he was supposed to be like a Dr. Frankenstein
delivering it in a Joss Whedon manner, because there's a very specific cadence to the way that Joss Whedon writes, and I feel like no one was getting it except for him.
Mm. So yeah, so the very Shakespearean turn where this, like, blended human alien baby kills its mother and, I don't know, wreaks havoc. It was so much less intimidating than the alien queen that it seemed ridiculous to even have bothered going that route.
And it's weird looking. With the big, like, what
it's
is that?
It's the first alien with eyes.
Yeah, he's like a Puss in Boots kind of eyes, though. Like,
oh, the
big,
sad,
like,
cat eyes.
Yeah. And you're like, well, that's adorable. I mean, I get that it's, like, murdering things, but at the same time, you're like, meow.
Yeah, and it's even, I mean, that it is hurting things, I guess the implication is that, like, well, it's super strong. But it was soft looking. Like, the fingers are not creepy, sharp alien
claws. It's not all hard. Like, the queen is all, like, hard and completely not squishy.
Yeah. It's squishy by the end when it gets sucked out the
when
porthole.
It gets squished out.
But yeah, so that kind of blew. I feel a little guilty for liking a lot of this movie.
No, because I think the reason people like it is because they really liked the first three and they'll go along with whatever comes after it.
Yeah.
And you'll give, like, a little bit of, like, leeway to anything because you want to see your favorite character again and you want to see the xenomorphs again and you want to see and you want to like it.
Yeah, but it's funny that, like, they changed every one of those things. They're like, your favorite character, not her anymore. It's like a souped up ultra mega Ripley, and the alien that you liked, it's a creepy albino baby xenomorph. And yeah, I don't know. I think its biggest crime was calling it an alien film.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So that, yeah, that kind of stunk. And I think as far as Fox is concerned, I mean, whatever, it's show business. Nothing is sacred. They've clearly shown that with the Aliens vs. Predator series and Prometheus.
I love AVP.
But, okay, see the second one and then get back
to me. It's not that, like, I love it standing alone. I just like it because I like to see the Aliens and the Predators fight. And I don't know.
Oh,
I watch
I dig
every
that, but
time
it's even
that
PG.
Movie's on TV,
it
I watch
was even
it.
Shot for PG, so I
yeah,
can't
I watch
even
it on TV all the time. It's either Silence of the Lambs or AVP. that's like on TV.
That is the strangest thing I've ever heard.
And whenever they're on, I have to watch one of them.
All right. I don't know what to say after that. But okay. So that's it for this epic alien saga. Again, I want to apologize to Dawn and Jen from Women in Caskets. We will make it up to you somehow. In the meantime, you can check them out at womenincaskets.com. You can also follow their Tumblr, which is womenincaskets.tumblr.com. And they have regular images and updates and just snatches and grabs of different cool horror stuff. They're also on Facebook and Twitter at Women in Caskets. And we're on Facebook and Twitter. We are Rance Macabre on Twitter and Facebook. And therancemacabre.com is our hub where you can find the podcast as well as some added visuals and show breakdowns and some video stuff that we're working on.
And be sure to check out our always changing awesome banners that Darren does, which we had the alien banner, which I was so happy that we had 2 weeks with the xenomorph.
Yeah, that's fun. That's fun to change it up for that.
It's like my favorite one. I kind of want it all the time.
Okay, well, we can only do so much. Maybe we'll do Alien vs. Predator. We're never doing Alien vs. Predator. I'm lying.
One day I'll change your mind. One day it'll be like really late and really cold outside, and it'll be on TV, and you'll be like, you know what I want to watch? AVP.
Joke's on you. I don't have television.
My name's Darren. I don't watch TV. I don't know. You got Southern at the end.
Okay, you want to take us out?
Yeah, here we go. You've been listening to The Rance Macabre, a presentation of the Fangoria Podcast Network, produced by Darren Rosario and Thomas DeFeo, and executive produced by Ken Hanley of Fangoria Entertainment. For press opportunities, advertising inquiries, and information about The Rance Macabre, contact Ken at fangoria.com.
This is me, Darren, signing off.
And this is Mindy. Thanks.